Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Our weekly conversations include you. Tonight, if you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open. 941-3689 is a number if you're calling us from Oahu. And from the neighbor islands, it's 877-941-3689. And that number also works if you're calling us from the mainland. Your news feeds in Twitter, Facebook, and whatever else you use are probably filled with pictures of people taking the Ice Bucket Challenge. Now, the ALS awareness campaign started by one family to challenge some friends has gone beyond viral, raising over $108 million. And while ALS and a lot of other nonprofits are taking note of that success around the world in potable water-challenged places, South India, for example, the reaction is a little different. Tonight, we'll talk with Fred Fisher, the president and CEO of the ALS Association Golden West chapter, that includes Hawaii. Also, one of its trustees is here with me in studio, Lucy Wiedemeyer. She's the surviving spouse of noted football coach Charlie Wiedemeyer. And joining us by phone is Lisa Maruyama, the executive director of the Hawaii Alliance of Nonprofit Organizations. We'll look behind this unlikely campaign and the creativity that's translating into cash. And we want to hear from you. Did you take the Ice Bucket Challenge? Or is your nonprofit now trying to find something equally as cool and oddball to captivate donors? We want to hear from you, too. Again, our number, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Welcome to you all. Thank you for making time for us tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Fred, I want to start with you. This campaign seemed to literally come out of the woodwork from a family in Boston. Was there any discussion about this before it was sort of launched?
No, it took us by surprise in the same way that it took the rest of the country by surprise. It's a family that's connected to the ALS Association, has been supportive of the local chapter of the ALS Association there in Massachusetts. But this is something that they had seen in connection to other charitable causes, and Pete Frates decided that he would do it for ALS, and the rest is internet and philanthropy history.
Did they have to get any sort of clearance with you once they sort of launched it and said this thing is really moving, and you said that it just sort of took you all by surprise? Very often with third-party events or ideas, organizations at least want to know that they're going to happen.
Yeah, no, nothing happened preemptively, but as soon as it happened, the local media got a hold of it, and of course, at that point, they reached out to the local ALS Association chapter, and as the media began picking it up regionally and nationally, then the National ALS Association became involved. And it was really that effort with the national media that it very much became a collaboration that was sparked by the Frates family. But very quickly they saw that this was becoming a national story, and the National ALS Association, as our partner in this, got involved very early on to then help the national media understand what was going on, understand more about ALS, and more about the ALS Association in terms of what it is we do in the fight against this disease.
Was there a point where you really knew that this thing was veering off into territory that you'd never seen before during this time period? And what was that? What was that sort of breaking point where you realized that this was a very, very different campaign from perhaps some other third-party campaigns?
When my daughters were visiting me in Los Angeles and said, "You're doing this, aren't you?" it was at that point I knew that that this was coming, and it was time for me as the head of my organization to get on board. And I think when it hit $20 million was the point at which I was wondering, so is this going to be sustainable, or is this going to, you know, are we at the peak? And here we are 3 weeks later and $108 million in, What's happened is, I'm not sure that it's peaked in the United States, but it's now, I knew it was becoming an even bigger story when I had a French news crew in my office interviewing me for French television, that I knew this had become something that none of us could have ever imagined.
At that point, because you have the Golden West chapter, which encompasses California and a lot of celebrities, was there any outreach to celebrities, or did that take off on its own too?
Well, Alex O'Loughlin, the star of Hawaii Five-0, is someone that I reached out to early on because of his connection to us, because in addition to serving California, we also serve Hawaii. Knowing Alex's connection and roots in Hawaii, he was someone that we reached out to. But the beauty of this campaign is that it wasn't orchestrated by the ALS Association. It was really our job to keep the media informed about a story that was captivating them. We weren't doing things to get the media's attention. The media was coming to us to explain what's going on. And it was the families who were calling out other families, and then it moved into the celebrity community, and then it moved into the our elected officials, and it moved into our corporate leaders in a completely organic way, in a way that's totally consistent with social media.
And now you've got a lot of organizations wishing that they could be that lucky. I want to get Lisa Mariyama into the conversation. Lisa, you there?
I am.
As you've been listening to what Fred has been explaining, I mean, certainly there are organizations just scratching their heads, hoping that they can come up with the next one that looks like this. What has been the Hawaii sort of reaction to the Ice Bucket Challenge? Any different from what we've seen in other places?
No, I mean, no different. I think probably a lot of envy by other organizations at the success of this campaign. I think, as Fred said, it just had the great ingredients of the power of social media, sort of allowing things to go viral. There was a very visual aspect to this campaign. And so in combination with other media that could enhance or further explain, I guess, the mission and the purpose of the organization, it kind of went hand in hand with the more fun and whimsical aspects of the campaign. And because it spanned different generations of donors, I think that helped, aided the success. So I think nonprofits probably all over the world, including in Hawaii, are looking in on this experiment, the social experiment, really to see what elements of the campaign could be, I wouldn't say replicated, but really learned from, lessons learned as to what sort of works in very successful fundraising campaigns.
In those conversations about lessons that a lot of nonprofits are continuing to learn, I mean, this thing looks like the stellar textbook case of what social media can do in its power and its reach. But also there is something to be said of that captivating element that is beyond just how you put it out, but the thing itself. Are there any conversations about that thing, the Ice Bucket Challenge, and why that's so captivating?
Well, and I think that's why you often hear that really video is the way to go in really getting your message out and being compelling. In this kind of 365-day news cycle and 24/7, where images and visuals are hitting us all the time, I think video is so captivating of a mechanism to compel someone to donate. And so this had kind of the challenge aspect to it, I think. So you also got to witness somebody having an ice bucket dumped on them, but then waiting, with bated breath to see who else they were going to challenge. So that was the viral nature of it. So it had, again, I'd said it has all the ingredients of success. I would say that it's really important to always reframe the activity with the meaning of the activity, to work in hand-in-hand with media to really talk about the true, real issues, the true mission of the organization and the challenges of the constituency, and just to make sure that it doesn't lose that the meaning behind the activity and it doesn't feel vacuous or meaningless, you know, to people as the campaign spreads.
Fred, were you at all concerned about that, that somehow this thing was so much fun, crazy, oddball, that it was not going to allow the real message to come through?
Well, you know, I think that's the counterintuitive nature of this, and it's something that we all need to take a look at, because those of us that are entrenched in the missions of our organization and the needs of the populations that we're here to serve can sometimes get so blinded by that that we miss what is obviously an incredible opportunity. The only thing that this had to do with ALS was that a person with ALS decided to use it as a way to get attention, and using one of what we all know is a very powerful force in nature, and that's peer pressure. And it was a kind of magical combination of a person with ALS doing it, number one, which is different than me doing it to get attention or a caregiver doing it to get attention, but a young man who is struggling with this devastating disease is so desperate that he is willing to pour a bucket of ice water over his head to get attention around it and then use peer pressure to get other people to do it. And none of that really has much at all to do with ALS, but over the course of this, I don't even know what to call it, the ALS became, I think at one point, the fourth highest Googled term. So we know that it wasn't just people doing it blindly, not really caring about what the cause was. It was actually a huge success of this for us, is not just the financial windfall that it's created, but the awareness that it's created and that the understanding about ALS that it's created, because people really took the step to understand, well, what is ALS? Because that's a question most people ask. And what's happened is that as an organization, what we used to say is ALS is more commonly known as Lou Gehrig's disease. And now we are comfortable saying Lou Gehrig's disease is now more commonly known as ALS. And that's a huge step for a disease that few people know very much about.
And certainly
those
if you're talking about
Lou Gehrig probably don't have any idea.
Right. That's what I was going to ask you about, that when you're talking about a generational difference of you know, several decades of people who would have any knowledge of who, you know, Lou Gehrig was and what ALS really is, that maybe you are able to switch this to a much more accessible way of defining the disease.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That what we've seen is that for young people in their 20s and 30s, they are very likely not to have really any connection to Lou Gehrig or who he was, or and most people who have a connection to Gehrig at all still don't understand what the disease is. And now we had millions of people Googling ALS and understanding what it is.
Well, someone who clearly understands what it is sitting right to my left. Lucy Wiedemeyer is here, and I want to get her into this conversation, too. But before I do, if you're just joining us tonight on Town Square, we're talking about the Ice Bucket Challenge and what that says about the way we donate to causes. It's a textbook stellar case for the use and power of social media. Did you do the Ice Bucket Challenge? Did that make you find out more about ALS? And if you have a nonprofit that you're hoping that might be able to emulate this in some way, are you really studying some of the lessons as this this campaign keeps just giving? 941-3689 is our number, 941-3689 and 877-941-3689 if you call us from the neighbor islands or, frankly, just about anywhere else. Lucy Wiedemeyer, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, Beth Ann, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
You have had probably more experience than most of us in dealing with ALS and the fact that someone who you loved very much spent over 30 years battling it. And as you looked at this campaign, how did you consider this campaign? Was this a good thing?
Oh, I think it was a fabulous thing to use something as really silly as pouring a bucket of ice water over your head. And on top of that, then challenging friends, you know, people that you know, to, hey, make a donation or you get the ice bucket.
Or both.
And what's happened is most of it is both. You know, people are really excited about doing something like this that they honestly have found a connection through the challenges, through friends who may have known someone with the disease. And so I think the awareness is absolutely astonishing and wonderful. When my husband was diagnosed at the age of 29, there was no ALS chapter. There was basically no hope. Doctors said, basically, go home and learn how to die. And to see the excitement, naturally the money's generated for research today is just, I mean, it's such a thrill because it's not the disease that gets the money. You know, patients die too quickly for researchers to say, well, I'm going to invest. And so now it's opened up doors all over the world to be able to discover so much more about the disease.
And about how generational giving may work, because we're noticing that, well, you know, if you're a millennial, you give a little bit differently than if you are a baby boomer or fill in any other, you know, generation you want, that there really is something that has to captivate you to take you and pull you all in.
Oh, I think it's really something that also has allowed families who are dealing with ALS to kind of have something fun to gravitate towards, to talk about it. Locally here in Hawaii, I loved what the Foodland employees have done. They've challenged store after store and taken it to a new level. So it's really a special, wild and crazy event that's truly a pioneer in fundraising. I mean, who would have thought anything could be accomplished like this? And I think it's wonderful because now other diseases and nonprofits are looking at just opportunities that are maybe a little outside the lines.
The sheer reach of all this, and maybe that some of those wild and crazy ideas they might have had a while ago that they thought perhaps weren't dignified or weren't going to reach the target audience might in fact be the best way to reach them. Lisa, is there any conversation happening specifically about that, that really how we're reaching donors now is very different and something like this might be a better idea than some of the ideas that have been floating around for a long time, even if they've been even newer ideas?
You know, and I guess I would say that no one solution works for all. You know, that I think that it's best to kind of embrace and adopt different ways of approaching different types of donors. And, of course, it depends on the age of your constituency. You know, if you have a school with parents and it's a very defined constituency, you may have different techniques for reaching out to them. You might use social media and you might use traditional, you know, snail mail letters that go home to the parent. So what works for that school might be very different for, say, a small grassroots environmental organization that has very different constituencies. So I don't think there's any one answer. I will say, though, that social media, usage of social media for fundraising is definitely on the rise. Email usage of crowdfunding mechanisms and platforms to fundraise. Even here in Hawaii, I can, you know, reference the recent Blue Planet Foundation project, Reficiency, that actually partnered with the YWCA.
And Hawaii Public Radio,
and
too.
Public Radio, exactly.
We are very grateful for that fact.
Right. And Damien Memorial School, the three sort of pilot organizations that utilized crowdfunding with its own constituencies to actually raise money for to raise money to bring in efficiencies around their usage of electricity and other
but if
lighting.
If I can stop you for one quick second there, because that, you know, without kind of going a little bit further and saying that the interesting component to the WeFishiency campaign was that people were either loaning the money and then they were going to get it back, or they could elect to pay it forward. It was very different from a straight, you know, donation in the traditional sense that we've come to know what donations mean.
Right. So, I mean, there's a creativity factor there in that, you know, you're basically challenging the donor to think out of the box about the way that his or her donor monies could be utilized. And I that was a fresh kind of take on crowdfunding. And it takes the donor back, because you can really think about whether you want to just loan it. And then the savings that the nonprofit then realizes can be given back, you know, paid back to the donor. So it changes the relationship and the dynamic between the donor and the, you know, the recipient. You know, I would say there's also these other, I don't know if you've heard recently about the most recent Special Olympics activity of rappelling off the Hyatt here and for, you know, basically as a fundraising initiative. So there's some other types of kind of zany things that really grab you and compel a donor who might not normally be a donor to that organization to really stop and think about the challenge.
Well, that's the point. Compel and repel off and have a good time.
Compel and repel, right, exactly.
But also to do it with a philanthropic basis.
Right.
Really, what I'm hearing you say and what we've been watching happen for a while, and we've had some of those conversations in past shows, how we're changing and how we want to continue to make it fun, that element of fun coming back in and being paired with donating to a favorite cause, or maybe even not even a cause you knew about before, because it's just so captivating.
Well, the idea of fun and fundraising isn't a new one. We just haven't thought about it in these terms. We all know about golf tournaments and galas and walks and all the things that we do to raise money. And we know that when people have a good time at our fundraisers, that translates into higher revenue. But this really takes fun to a very different place. I know that if my staff would have come to me and said, we've got this great idea for a fundraiser, it's going to be fabulous, we're going to challenge people to either dump a bucket of ice water over their head or make a donation, I would have told them they were out of their minds. And so it really speaks to how we listen to our constituencies, how we engage young people in our organizations, and how we engage and manage social media. It often comes behind some of the other spending priorities that organizations have, but it really requires an entirely different mindset, an entirely different specialization, and an entirely different infrastructure to support it. And that's an investment that I'm guessing a lot of nonprofits haven't really felt that they were going to get the return on that investment. And I can tell you it has certainly taxed our capacity just in responding to this and keeping up with it. And it really challenges us to rethink our investment as nonprofit organizations in social media infrastructure and how we engage young people into the organization, either as staff or volunteers, to inform our thinking and really allow ourselves to be open to something that's going to feel foreign, that's going to feel uncomfortable, that might not even make sense, but it might be the pathway to the future.
And I would add,
go ahead,
I would add that, Dan, that, you know, I think we just have to get used to the ephemeral nature or the ephemeral relationship that we nonprofits will begin to have with donors, because we're hearing that, you know, gone is the donor that stays with you for the, you know, 30, 50 years of giving, that the younger generation is actually just really interested in the kind of the one-time experience, and they may not be focused so much on the organization per se, but more so just the idea of the cause and what the cause is doing. And so, you know, what I'm curious is, I know we're still not over with this ALS experiment, and things may play out still differently, and it's a current spurt, and it jettisons the organization forward in many different ways. I'm kind of curious to ask, what are the long-term effects of this? What is the next iteration of this campaign? How do you try to latch down on donors so that you can have a long-term relationship or of some kind of longer-term relationship than this one-time giving spurt. So I'm kind of curious what would be next steps.
Well, and that must be the question, certainly, Fred, that you're asking, because we know that if, you know, just based on some of the conversation we've had, if younger donors are that fickle, if they're kind of moving to the experience rather than necessarily the deep attachment to an organization, how are you going to outdo yourself after something like this?
Well, yeah, the problem is we didn't do this to ourselves, but now we find ourselves in the enviable position of trying to figure out how to engage literally millions of new donors. As an organization across the country, the attrition rate of donors is very high for a number of reasons that may not be unique to ALS, but they're certainly part of it. So I don't believe that as an organization we've effectively overcome the challenge of our attrition rate for donors, and we just magnified the problem exponentially. So it's a great question that we are asking ourselves now in terms of what does this mean in terms of our marketing program? What does this mean in terms of how we move forward and how do we steward people who have a variety of different interests into some kind of sustained relationship with the organization.
You're talking about teaching them how to give and the fact that giving is important. We sort of lost that along the way a couple of decades ago, and it seems to be making a resurgence. If you're just joining us tonight, we're talking about the Ice Bucket Challenge, not just the challenge itself, but what it says about what donors may want and how this came out of nowhere, not even done by ALS itself, but by a family that just thought it would be a cool thing to do, challenging friends, and then off it went. And now, $108 million and counting later, it's still moving. Other organizations looking to possibly try to find something that would be as compelling as this. But for you, looking at it on the receiving end, have you done the Ice Bucket Challenge? And or if you are part of a nonprofit organization, are you looking at some very creative, out-of-the-box ideas that maybe you might have thought weren't so good? And now looking at them with fresh eyes. Our number is 941-3689, 941-3689, or 877-941-3689. Going now to Sandy calling us from Honolulu.
Hi.
Oh, I think I know who this is. Hello, Sandy.
Hi, Bethann.
And our condolences on the passing of your mother yesterday.
Thank you very much. I'd just like to say that, you know, whatever it takes to bring awareness to ALS or whatever cause you may have as your goal, do it. Because I'm a Facebook fanatic, and I've been seeing so many different friends of mine and our own colleagues here at the station doing the Ice Bucket Challenge. And for a disease that has no known cure or any really effective treatment, I urge everybody to just get in and do it, because it's a crazy disease that just took my mom so quickly. Like, she lasted, I think, 3 months since the diagnosis.
Well, we know that it's this hard for you to make the call, but sure glad you did. Thanks so much, Sandy.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Aloha, and our aloha with you. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. How are you processing this wild, crazy thing called the Ice Bucket Challenge? And did you do it? Did you look at it and think, wow, I'm just doing that because it's fun? Did it make you find out more about ALS? We want to find out from you, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If you're calling us from the Neighbor Islands, use that last number, the 877-941-3689. Going to Julia calling us from Waikoloa. Aloha, Julia. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha and mahalo for taking my call. I just wanted to say that when this was first going on with the ALS, and we know friends that have this, it was important to us. And I thought, well, my mother's sister and my grandmother have all had Alzheimer's. So I said, we got to jump on the stick and figure out a way to make Alzheimer's. I mean, there's a lot more people affected with that than ALS, unfortunately, for you know, for the Alzheimer's people that are, you know, dealing with it. And so I came up with a pucker up, you know. My thought was to have a lemon and slice it and, like, pucker up because, you know, we're all puckering up about this situation and you know, suck it up and let's get some money here for the Alzheimer's people in the future of research and development to make sure that we can find a cure and fast. We can't continue to walk to end Alzheimer's because walking isn't getting us far enough.
Well, I think that was Fred's point, that some of the ways that funds have been traditionally raised, the walks, the galas, the, you know, the fun night out doing something with, you know, going to the theater, and certainly galas and golf tournaments might once have been an idea of fun, but we're moving into a very different time with very different potential donors. Now that you sort of announced this idea, are you at all concerned that somebody else is going to say, yeah, that sounds good, and we'll nab it?
Oh, gee whiz. Well, maybe I should write to the ALZ Association tomorrow then.
Or you could be like...
about it like my family, because it's just something, you know, that needs to be done. I mean, we have just so many immediate family members that have been, you know, afflicted with this horrible thing, and it's despicable. And I guess most of the victims are the families that have to look at this. And
right, and a lot of families, forgive me for interrupting
it,
but a lot of families feel that way about whatever cause or disease they're looking at and trying to say, you know, we got to get some attention too.
True.
And how they're trying to do this, given the fact that this wasn't sort of an ALS, you know, launched campaign, but something that took you all by storm. I guess that there's some sort of grace in that too, Fred. They can't hate you for too long.
Absolutely.
Well, it's important that that we realize that we're all in this together. The neurodegenerative diseases that affect so many people, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, Huntington's, ALS, frontal temporal dementia, they all have similar symptom expression. They all have similar processes. And taken together, they're the fifth leading cause of death in the country, and none of them have an effective treatment or cure. And beyond the genetic predispositions that can run in families with those diseases, they also occur sporadically. We are all at risk of them. And the Alzheimer's community, the Parkinson's community, can take solace in knowing that the same researchers that are looking at ALS are also looking at Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, because they do share so much in common. And so while this money is being put to work for ALS research, the research community actually believes that if you can unlock the key to ALS, you can actually unlock the key to many of these neurodegenerative diseases.
Which certainly is good news for Julia, who
ALS
just called us.
ALS research doesn't operate in a vacuum. It operates within the entire neurodegenerative disease space. And we are committed to that. It's also been the case that since ALS is an orphan disease by FDA status, and that, yes, relatively fewer people in the country have it than other neurodegenerative diseases because they don't live as long. The ALS community has often found itself sort of on the outside looking in, that, it, you know, it's the big diseases that get the attention. It's the big diseases that are raising the hundreds of millions. And the ALS community has often felt kind of out in the cold. And so it's a little ironic that just by happenstance this happened. It's also important to remember that this started out and has continued mostly as an awareness activity, that do it to raise awareness, post your video showing you doing it and why you're doing it, and if you don't want to do that, then give money. That's how it started. So it really didn't start as a fundraiser per se. It grew into a fundraiser, not because I think millions of people were opting out, because what we saw people doing suddenly is drenching themselves and giving. But they were at first given the choice, and so the motive was really more about awareness and morphed into this incredible fundraiser.
Which might be a lesson in itself about going in sort of through the back door of real fun and quirkiness and then having the dollars be attached to it as well. If you've just gotten into your car and you're listening to us talk tonight on Town Square, we're taking a look at the Ice Bucket Challenge. What a phenomenon, not just for ALS, but what it says about the reach of social media, the way in which people like to give, and more so, just how do you create an awareness campaign when the organization itself didn't even know you were doing it? We want to hear what you have to say about this. Was this as captivating to you as it was to as many people who have been donating over $108 million to date since this campaign began? 941-3689, if you call us from Oahu, that's the number to use, 941-3689, or 877-941-3689. We know a lot of you did this because we've seen your pictures. So call us up and tell us why you decided to do this, and also how important it was to you to be able to attach the giving part of it, or was it just really the fun that got you? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. I want to ask you all a question that, you know, maybe you don't want to stop and consider a whole lot, but is there really a downside to this? Were there any health risks or concerns that you had as you saw all these people dumping these, you know, very big ice buckets on their head with ice cold water? Anything that that you found yourselves thinking about that maybe this could be detrimental, Fred?
Well, I have to admit that I did watch a loop of some of the ice bucket fails that you can find online, and while it's sometimes fun to see a little kid fall over because the bucket of water is too heavy, watching people dump huge buckets off second-story buildings on top of people, concerning to me that people had taken it to a point where they were one-upping each other in some segment of the millions of videos that were posted in a way that was just flat out dangerous. But I think most people who did it, and many who did it in large groups, did it with fun and safety and creativity. I've seen everything from, two dozen people dumping buckets to a dozen people standing under a front loader tractor dumping a whole tractor bucket onto them. I think most people use good judgment, but there's always those people out there who take it too far and put themselves or others at risk, and we definitely don't want to see that.
Lucy, I want to ask you, did you do it?
We did it. I did it with 7 of my 10 grandchildren, and it was absolutely a joy. When you think about it, it's such a devastating, awful disease, and yet this is fun and silly and off the charts crazy. It allows people a talking point. You know, I hear people in the grocery store saying, did you do it? Did you see this one? Did you see that one? And it's created a buzz that is actually quite positive.
And you probably couldn't have done it any better than if you tried to orchestrate the whole darn thing.
Oh, never.
Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Just testing the waters and maybe the ice water about the Ice Bucket Challenge and how you look at this as being a phenomena that you might have chosen to engage in, or perhaps for whatever reason didn't. 941-3689 if you're on Oahu. We want to hear from you. And from the neighbor islands or the mainland, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Going to Jane calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Jane. Thanks for your patience.
Aloha, and you're welcome. What I like about this is that it's been my daughter starting the conversation and not me about giving. And so this is, I still have to do it. I've been challenged. But this has been a family, kids, children. We've had students call out teachers. And I think that's awesome. The other thing I did notice is there is a great video about a young man who's 24 who did this challenge, but he also has been diagnosed with ALS and his mother, and he shows a video of that. and how it has affected his whole family. And that was very helpful, too.
But the fact that this came through your daughter, can we ask how old your daughter is?
She's 14.
Okay, so she's a tween.
We've done a lot of different things together, but it's always come from me first, and this came from her.
And a lot of people are thinking that looks pretty neat. Thanks so much for calling and telling us about it. If you would like to weigh in on this conversation, we've got phone lines open with your name on it, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We're looking at the phenomena of the Ice Bucket Challenge. What does this mean as we look at how, you know, being a donor is changing and how we engage people with some things that are sometimes quirky and oddball and strange? And not something that would fit in the traditional toolbox of fundraising. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. The other part of this, too, is it was just started without the organization even knowing about it. And if you have an idea, are you looking at starting something for something that you care about that you think might be equally as captivating? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going now to Luke, somewhere in the Poly. Hope you're driving carefully or pulled off.
Yes, I am. I'm on hands-free, so.
Oh, good. Thank you. I feel so much better.
So I did the Ice Bucket Challenge, and I found the whole thing very interesting. I did it partially because one of my best friend's wife's mother has ALS, and I thought it was a good cause, and it, you know, I thought it brought a lot of attention to it that it didn't have before. So in that aspect, I thought it was very good.
Did you actually go and look up what ALS was all about, or did you know beforehand?
I knew what it was before, and I've done other charity things for Alzheimer's because I've had grandparents that have both had Alzheimer's, so I knew that it was somewhat similar, and I knew about it before, though.
All right, and you had no qualms about doing this and posting this video at all, and did people respond well to you and to your challenges of them?
They did. It was very interesting. I got challenged by another mutual friend of ours that we're all best friends and related to this other guy. But the thing that was kind of interesting to me that I've noticed is I don't know if anybody's read Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs had his Facebook page. And the thing that's been kind of interesting to me is, despite the amount of support that I have, is that it seems to me that a lot of people have almost taken it to kind of a childish level. I've seen videos where people are seriously injured from the stunts they were doing with the ice buckets. I've also seen people badgering. Mike Rowe's issue was that he had fans that were badgering him, saying, you know, I challenged you a couple of days ago. What's wrong with you? You haven't done this challenge. And I find it so much that some of the respect for these challenges has been kind of lost to some degree with a lot of the challenges that have been put out there.
Yeah, Luke, I mean, you bring up a really good point that, you know, there is a point too far, and maybe there is a way that's less filled with integrity in which to ask somebody or just to make a real pain in the neck of yourself and try to get someone to do what you'd like them to do, particularly on Facebook. A lot of people feel that way about the whole poke feature, but that's a whole other issue. Going now to Eric, calling us from Kalihi. Aloha, Eric. Thanks for your patience.
Hi, Beth Ann. Thanks for taking my call. My mom was Peggy Chun, and she passed from ALS about 5 years ago.
And a real favorite of a lot of people around here.
Yeah, and we had a lot of support. And I just want to say hi to Fred and Lucy.
Hi, guys. Hi, Eric. Good to hear your voice.
Glad I caught you guys on the drive home here. I just wanted to say that it took me by surprise, the amazing awareness campaign from this. And what's been really big is the patient services that my mom received. And the money that's being raised now, it's really going to help with that. And her sister, who passed away in the 80s from the same disease, she didn't really get that, you know. And so back then, you know, really no one knew about it, and it was even more obscure. So what's happening now is really amazing, and so happy that it's happening.
And Eric, thank you so much for calling and saying hello.
You're welcome.
Aloha. If you'd like to join us tonight, we're talking about the Ice Bucket Challenge, not just the thing itself and did you do it or did you choose not to for whatever reason? Did some of it go too far or maybe for you, not far enough? But really, how does this inform how we look at fundraising within a certain group of people? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. The reach, the power of social media, the captivating nature of this particular campaign, can this be leveraged in other campaigns for ALS? Is this a one-off? We have to kind of wait and see what happens with that. But for the moment, having raised $108 million plus, folks over at ALS are pretty happy. So how do you look at this campaign if you're in a nonprofit? How do you look at this and say, what can we do? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you're calling us from the neighbor islands. Going now to Mark calling us from Javi. Aloha, Mark. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha.
Hi there. Hello. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Aloha.
Yes, I was just really amazed at how quick this happened, and I am impressed with that. But I chose not to take the challenge, and I find myself not wanting to participate in the sort of critical mass that can occur on social media, and I find that I'm more attracted to local causes from, you know, sustainable farming to a local surf contest for kids. And that's where I choose to put my focus. And I'm glad to see it, and I was really impressed. But I also wonder, what is this going to do with the other nonprofits? And now, you know, are we going to see a big flurry of this next challenge, that next challenge? And I'm kind of like, oh, gosh, here we go. There's this new trend now.
Well, some have already started. And judging by the success of this, we may yet see some more of those. But it had nothing to do with what ALS started itself. It was done by someone else outside of the organization, which is to say that maybe unplanned campaigns like this have a mystique that a planned campaign might not have. Fred, would you agree with that?
Well, I think that makes a good point, that as organizations, we need to have lots of channels of communication to people. We need to have lots of involvement opportunities. It's why this Saturday we have a Walk to Defeat ALS in Kapi'olani Park. It's not an ice bucket challenge. It's a traditional walk, a gathering of the community and those who want to support them. So I don't think it's about one or the other. I think this is a lesson in diversity, and it's a lesson in that you do need to have different ways of reaching different people to thrive as an organization. And your last caller proved that point really well, and that's something that resonates very strongly with us. And I think that as far as, you know, other organizations, you know, trying to replicate this, our best fundraisers, whether it's the Walk to Defeat ALS, last year was so successful, not because we did it. It was because the community, the ALS community, embraced it. The Ice Bucket Challenge wasn't successful because we did it. It's because that community, the ALS community, embraced it.
All right. Can I stop you there for a second?
The challenge of organizations is really finding what is the community going to embrace and having a diverse portfolio of opportunities so that you can achieve success in lots of different areas.
Right, because this goes back to the point that there is no one-size-fits-all way of approaching a donor, and there are no, you know, one-size-fits-all donors either. Lisa, as you know, we've been talking about this and looking at how this may change or may not necessarily change what organizations choose to do. There's still the idea that you have to have the portfolio approach. Does that portfolio look like it's changing from what you're seeing here in Hawaii?
Well, absolutely. You know, I guess I do want to also make the point that it has to be a meaningful interaction. And so donors still, at the end of the day, no matter whether it's a quirky challenge or rappelling off a building or something, at the end of the day, I think for there to be meaning around the act of giving, organizations really need to give thought to being transparent and accountable, accounting for the money that is coming in, and really connecting the donor and linking the donor to how life will change, how a community will be improved, or how a defined constituency will benefit from this infusion of dollars in whatever way it comes in. And so I would just remind that I think we have to always be careful to have that second part of the story, you know, so the money came in, but now what? In this case, it's going to go to valuable, valuable research, as we've heard on these various callers. But still, that where, you know, a little more detail to that, like what exactly happens as a result of the research happening, who benefits, you know. And so Fred did a really good job of sharing a little bit in this hour of the work of the ALS Association. That was very educational for me. I've been heartened by this whole thing. The other caller called it critical mass, and it wasn't something he wanted to jump onto. I was actually just heartened by the common act of humanity in kind of spades. I mean, it was on a scale and a scope, because of social media, we're allowed to really see the scope of this campaign. And I think we should just step back and kind of acknowledge that this was all for a nonprofit organization. And from certainly where we stand at HUNO, that's progress. And the person, the woman who called and said her daughter was initiating this civic act, is just, you know, it's just really inspiring to hear that these types of creative campaigns are really reviving civic commitment and civic activity in our community amongst our young people. And that's, I think, at the end of the day, those are the things that we should be really pleased about. We've made progress on those fronts.
Thank you for joining us, and stay with us, Lisa Mariama from HANO, the Hawaii Alliance of Nonprofit Organizations. 941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. We're talking about the Ice Bucket Challenge and some of its, you know, permutations. Lisa, you mentioned that it's, you know, this act of humanity, but some would argue that that comes from a distinctly American perspective or a Western perspective. There has been some criticism in India of, you know, people taking potable water and dunking right. their heads over it, and they now have a spinoff of this called the Rice Bucket Challenge, and really looking at how do we make a local challenge meaningful in the area in which it's being run.
Yeah, I feel like this was an activity that is definitely from a developed nation in terms of our sensibility and our values, and it may resonate differently in other countries. But certainly, I mean, I think this particular activity will be tweaked in many different ways, and there will be copycats, and there will be substitutes for the ice water, and depending on how it resonates in a community. I think Fred said it well, that this has to connect to the community in a meaningful way. This
All right.
means something to a population.
I'm going to stop you there, because we have somebody from the community who would like to connect with us.
Sure.
Dennis is calling us from Makawao. Aloha, Dennis. Thank you for your patience.
Hello. Thank you. I just wanted to point out that 27% of that money is going towards research, and $108 million, that's a lot of money going to marketing, and I guess 6 or 7 of the execs are making like $300,000-$400,000 a piece.
And where are you getting
like
your information?
Focus should be on the research that they have done, passing on the information about vitamin deficiencies that are related to the problem, and, you know, whatever else they know out there, instead of
this started as an awareness campaign, and the dollar part of it kind of happened on its own and ran through. But let's ask Fred about some of that. And thanks very much, Dennis, for your question. So Dennis
sure.
is concerned about how much of this money actually winds up in research and how much of it winds up going to overhead.
So donors can be very confident because the National ALS Association, as well as the Golden West Chapter, which are separate corporate entities, have both been independently evaluated by the largest charity evaluation organization in the country called Charity Navigator. And we've both achieved their highest rating, which is a rating that fewer than 20% of all nonprofits in the country can achieve 2 years in a row. And the National Association has done that. The Golden West Chapter has done that.
And so has HPR,
rating,
for that matter.
What's that?
And so has Hawaii Public Radio, for that matter.
Congratulations. And what it says to donors is That's a measure of accountability. It's a measure of transparency. It's a measure of commitment to vision and mission. And it's a measure of how much of the money is actually reinvested back into the mission of the organization. And for the Golden West chapter, it's about 78%. So 78 cents of every dollar is invested back into our mission priorities. And everything that the ALS Association does, everything the Golden West chapter does, is in support of an effective treatment and cure, whether that's funding bench science, whether that is taking care of people who have ALS, whether it is supporting and developing the clinics where people go to get treated for ALS. Those same clinics are the places where the laboratories go to conduct their clinical trials, whether it's our public policy efforts that generate state and federal dollars in support of research. There is a continuum of service. There's a continuum of activity. There is a drug development pipeline that starts with basic science and ends with people with ALS in clinical trials being run in clinics. And the ALS Association funds that entire continuum. So it's why we're very comfortable that everything we do supports the search for an effective treatment and cure, from bench science all the way to the clinical care that patients received. And that's what the ALS Association is about. And you don't have to take our word for it.
You can go look it up on Charity Navigator for yourself.
Correct.
All right. We're coming up to the top of the hour. And I'm just wondering, as all of you are looking at a very traditional type of activity happening on Saturday, as you mentioned, the walk, but if there will be sort of the confluence of these two things, where people will also be dumping buckets of ice water on their heads and using that day as another way to be able to further a campaign that you had not a whole lot to do with.
Well, what we hope is that people are using the awareness of the Ice Bucket Challenge to be able to go out to their friends, to their coworkers, to their employers, to say, support the mission of the ALS Association, support my Walk to Defeat ALS team. That the awareness this has created makes it a little easier for people to go out and ask for the support, because the ALS Association, the Golden West chapter, we don't get third-party reimbursements. We don't get money from insurance companies for the services we provide. We don't get money from the state or federal government for the services we provide. Everything we do with contributions from people who are connected to the ALS community, one way or another. And so for us, it's an opportunity for our constituents, for the people in Hawaii who are suffering with this disease, to have a little easier time going out and saying, help us help the ALS Association help us. And it's important for people to know that all the money that we raise in Hawaii stays in Hawaii. It gets reinvested back in service and support for people who have ALS or living with ALS, and we're also looking at developing opportunities to bring research to Hawaii, and the ALS registry is a way that people can currently participate in ALS research, but we're looking to do more, but the only way we can do more, provide more service, offer more research in Hawaii, is to raise more money so that we can invest it here.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, Fred, because we're coming up to the top of the hour. Thanks so much for joining us. I know you had some extenuating circumstances, and we really appreciate you making this hour available. Fred Fisher is the president and CEO of the ALS Association Golden West Chapter. Also want to thank Lisa Maruyama, the executive director of the Hawaii Alliance of Nonprofit Organizations. Thank you, Lisa. Just tell me you're not going to make me rappel off that building.
I'm not planning to.
Okay.
I'll watch others.
Okay. All right. I'll stay there on the ground and watch you too. And many thanks to Lucy Wiedemeyer for coming in and being here to speak on behalf of those who are living with ALS and who have unfortunately passed away from it. Thank you for being here.
Beth Ann, thank you so much. It's been very informative.
We'll see you tomorrow for the conversation right here on HPR2. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.